Hello everybody and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report, where a lot is happening. Oh boy, the news is breaking. I'm breaking. Everything's broken. But we do have something that is mostly whole, and that is our co-host for today's show, Yasmin Aliya Khan, joins us once again. Yasmin, how's it going?
It's going very well. Very happy to be back here.
Glad to have you back. I know you've been up to a lot. I hear there's a second season of your show.
Yep. Season 2 of the Global Thread podcast is launched as of yesterday. The first episode, we talked about the issues between Taiwan and China. And coming up, we're going to talk about Belarus. So stay tuned for that.
Oh, geez. Yes, there's been a lot going on there. So you're sort of touching on the Olympics, at least a little from your international lens. So that's fun. Yeah, the news is fun. The international news, so fun. Anyway, but we're very glad to have you here. We already had a big packed rundown where we were going to be talking about the upcoming reconciliation process and the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which is now passed. We will be talking about that before getting into so Yasmin's from Texas, and every time she's on, we like to provide a little bit of Texas news. And I swear it's not intentional that it's all highly negative, but we're going to be taking a look at the current state of the pandemic in Texas and what is being done to stop it. Spoiler alert, nothing. And then let's see, Marjorie Greene might be about to be done on Twitter. There's a cyber symposium full of cyber guys. So that's fun. And a lot more besides. Who write Mein Kampf? Who's to say, honestly? We'll have a debate about that. There's a lot going on. But Yasmin, you ready to jump into this?
Absolutely. Let's do it. Let's just get it over with.
Okay, you are. I don't know that I am. Oh, also, please hit the like button, share the stream if you haven't already. And there's a lot of other stuff going on. We'll update you as we go. But first, let's jump into this.
My sense of humor can be insensitive and off-putting. I do hug and kiss people casually, women and men. I have done it all my life. It's who I've been since I can remember. In my mind, I've never crossed the line with anyone. But I didn't realize the extent to which the line has been redrawn.
Okay, so in that you have Governor Andrew Cuomo, he's gone. That's his sort of way to dance around it and explain it. And we'll certainly respond to what he chose to say there. But I mean, that's your big news of the day. And I have to say, I did not necessarily see it coming. And if I did see it potentially coming, I didn't see it coming today or this week. I mean, things have been evolving. You know, one of his accusers had a big interview yesterday. One of his aides has stepped down, but down goes Cuomo. Yasmin, were you expecting this?
I was expecting that it would happen eventually. I wasn't sure how long it would take, but I figured eventually he would, mainly because he's a Democrat. And usually the Democrats will hold other Democrats accountable in that respect. Same reason we lost Al Franken and a few others, I'm sure you remember. You know, when he came out with his excuse where, you know, I've always done this, I always just hug men, women, whatever, doesn't matter, I've never thought anything of it. That was pretty wild for, I think, a lot of us to hear, especially in the age following, you know, the big Me Too movement came out a few years ago. It's kind of disheartening because we have all these big movements and it really does feel like you're preaching to the choir. The people who those messages are for either don't hear them because they're not in those spaces, or they hear them and they don't even realize that it's for them. You know, we're doing all this for people like you, you're the problem. But until somebody personally in their life comes up and says, it's you, it doesn't even register with them. And then you have the issue of intentionality versus the action and the outcome of your actions. A lot of times in the state with cancel culture and things like that, we look to intentionality a lot to determine whether or not this is actually a good person. But in the case such as this one, the outcome is what's important. You know, how much damage are you doing? And are you willing and able to learn from it? So you just stop doing it in the future. You know, we don't need you as governor anymore, but also stop what you're doing because it's bad and it's hurting people. And hopefully, hopefully Cuomo gets that bit of it by now.
Maybe. And we'll certainly talk about where this is going in the future. I want to piggyback on something you said. What is interesting is, so you get into effect versus intention, obviously, which is a very important component of this, I think, both morally as well as legally. He is very much focusing on intent. But the thing is, like, you know, a week ago or a few days ago, he was putting out those videos about, this is what I do. My grandmama told me to do this. Okay, so you're saying your intent was pure. Like, people responded and told you that that's not good enough, and you're now resigning. So you clearly get that it wasn't good enough. So why are you rolling out the exact same thing? What is the purpose of that? Now, we can speculate about the purpose. The purpose likely is still trying to do a little bit of damage control. Even if the damage control can't stop the damage of him having to resign, he wants to go out with as many people still being either on his side or believing that there's ambiguity, because we might speculate, and we will, about his next steps or what's going to happen to him. But he is definitely thinking about that. So Yasmin, it's just, it is weird to hear him say, like, word for word the same thing about the hugging, ignoring what is actually in the report, which is not just about some sort of hug during a photo op. It's about a pervasive, threatening approach to a dozen women, groping that is in no way about, his grandma did not like cup his buttocks. That is not a thing that happened. His grandma didn't ask him about his tattoos or his piercings, but he just ignores all of that because it's inconvenient, you know, to the image he's trying to maintain.
Yeah, I think you brought up a good point about, you know, what is his next move? What is he planning on doing in the future? Is he going to stay in politics? Because I don't really know how he could, when his whole party is turned against him and asked him to resign. The president of the United States asked this governor to resign based on all these accounts. So it does seem like damage control to me. Sorry. And actually, when you played that clip, I didn't realize that that was the new one that he just came out with. I thought it was the original one. So it is interesting. At least he's sticking to his messaging, I guess, is the, I don't know. It is crazy. I think people who are accused of things like this, though, it does take time to process and to understand what's happening. And a lot of times the public, we expect a turnaround very quickly. And we expect an apology very quickly. But in reality, if he's been living his entire life this way, it's gonna take some time for him to process, maybe go to therapy, I don't know, do whatever you gotta do to really understand the gravity of your actions and what came from it. And maybe in, like, I don't know, 10 years, he can come back and be like, I get it now.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that not happening though. Okay, let's talk about consequences. So what happens now for Cuomo, for his accusers, for the state? Well, for the state, apparently, Kathy Hochul will become the current lieutenant governor, will become the governor. She will be the first Buffalo native in 111 years, I'm learning. Also the first female governor of New York. You know, I'm sure she would probably prefer that this was not how it happened, but, you know, that sort of symbolically is pretty significant, that this guy who's faced all these accusations from women is being replaced by a woman. That said, in terms of Cuomo though, like, look, it's obviously better that he's resigning. I feared that he wouldn't, because I question whether any of the normal sort of societal or shame based ways that we get people to do the right thing don't seem to work as much. I mean, you know, the fact that Matt Gaetz, who is being accused of really bad stuff, he has never even come within a mile of resigning. You pointed out earlier that he's resigning. Well, he's a Democrat. That was the only way that it was going to happen. Why do you think he did? Is this about just damage control for a future political thing? Is this about damage control to potentially defang legal challenges that might be coming? Because of course, resigning doesn't mean that now the slate is clean. He doesn't have anything to worry about. What are your thoughts about all that mix?
As far as why he resigned, I just assumed that it was for pressure from within his own party. I don't think he understands he did anything wrong. As far as the legal implications of it, I mean, yeah, it was, what you said was correct. Everything is still going to be there waiting for him when he's done. I don't know if that would help his case, if it would make him look more favorable to a jury or to a judge or anything like that. You know, like, oh, at least he admitted it. At least he acknowledged it. At least he's already suffered some consequence, a huge consequence of his actions. Yeah. So maybe whatever sentence he gets, if and when that happens, could be lesser. I don't know. We're really just gonna have to see. Like, all of this is developing so quickly too that it's kind of hard to keep it all straight and remember what's happening and when. And I mean, this just broke, what, 20 minutes ago or like an hour ago or something. And yeah, I wasn't expecting it today. I thought it was gonna take a little bit longer, but I'm interested to see what comes from it, especially with the New York State that he's dealing with.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know, but man, things really have turned in the last year. Like, I was never into the weird Cuomo stuff last year, but he had a lot of supporters. People were talking about him potentially running, which never made sense to me. But you know, the Democrats,
I think that was like a Giuliani type thing. You know, where Giuliani was kind of pushed up after 9/11. And everybody thought he was the greatest thing to happen in New York City. And then Cuomo with COVID, and you know, well, at least initially we thought he was doing a great job with COVID. And then that turned out to also not be the case. So yeah, sure. I think, yeah.
Yeah, maybe he'll follow a Giuliani path. Maybe in 20 years, he'll pop up as like a legal aide to, you know, like scandal ridden President Pete Buttigieg, and you know, gel will be leaking down his face and he'll have pizza stains on his tie. Maybe that's what's happening to Cuomo.
What a nightmare. We're watching it all happen. We're watching the beginning of something very strange brewing.
They are. So anyway, that's what we know immediately. We will see if there's, you know, any big developments. Obviously, legal developments might be coming, and probably career developments. People have been speculating about whether he'll try to launch a show co-hosting something with Chris Cuomo or something like that. There's some talk of Between Two Cuomos. But I think he's probably gonna disappear for, I'll say, like, you know, one comedian, you know, hiding out in the hinterlands for a bit period, and then try to return either as a lobbyist or something. But I do see it being difficult. Like, I don't imagine he's gonna be running for president in 3 years. Like, that, I don't know, maybe I could be wrong. America fails me quite often, but that seems weird. Anyway, we are going to take our first break though. When we come back, we're going to you know, get back on track and talk about what's going on in the Senate today, what is likely to happen throughout the day. We've got a lot to come after this. Okay, back at it. Oh, before we jump back into things, I have a few things to let you know about. For instance, did you know that we are going to be ending the multicast of TYT on TDR? So what does that mean? Well, the live stream of the Young Turks played on the Young Turks YouTube channel. It also played on the Damage Report YouTube channel. That will be stopping next Monday, August 16th. Gone. If you'd like to watch that live stream, you of course can, but you'll have to go to youtube.com/TheYoungTurks. You can subscribe and get notifications and all that. It's still just as available. And while we loved, you know, Blue Lizard Guts says, get wrecked, main show. No, this isn't my choice. I'm just being told about this. I'm totally fine with it. I love that we had our own community. And honestly, I think it provided a better Czech community. But anyway, that's done for now. So, you know, go to youtube.com/TheYoungTurks and you can subscribe and still watch it. And, you know, it's still available on Twitch and on the members app and all that. Still available in a lot of different ways. You know what else is available? Every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific time. That is Rick Strom live with TYT Sports, available at youtube.com/TYT Sports. He talks about sports, but not just sports, also politics, gaming, does a bit of a live Q&A, that sort of thing. That is available every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific time. So even more content to look forward to. And no multi-stream of that either. That I did get involved in. But anyway, with that, why don't we talk about what's going on off in DC. This is gonna be a big week for the budget and for a couple different forms of the budget, actually. As we were preparing to go live, The Senate passed the bipartisan infrastructure bill. That is, of course, if you've been following this, the smaller, much more pared down specific hard infrastructure bill. And we're in the process basically of launching into the conversation around what is supposed to accompany it. What we were told would accompany it, which is the reconciliation version, which is not expected to be bipartisan because the Republicans don't give a damn. So there's going to be a budget blueprint, $3.5 trillion. We'll give you some of the details today, but understand that, of course, we've been breaking down the details over the past month or two. So it is all available. But the budget resolution, which Senate Democrats hope to pass by the end of this week, would allow the caucus to piece together social policy legislation this fall, paid for by raising taxes on the wealthy, large inheritances, and corporations. Although don't get too excited about that. We'll give you the details. It might not be as good as they might want you to believe. So Democrats are going to be taking this measure up as soon as that bipartisan infrastructure bill is passed. That is now done. So that will be happening. Together, the measures could secure virtually all of President Biden's $4 trillion economic agenda, rebuilding the nation's roads, bridges, rail lines, water systems, and electricity grid, while expanding public education, social welfare, and healthcare, and remaking the federal tax code, while also having at least some, if not what was promised on climate and dealing with the climate crisis. They're going to be aiming to reduce carbon dioxide emissions and prevent wildfires, fund research on the effects of climate change on agriculture, create a civilian climate corps to carry out climate related public works and make the nation's coastlines more resilient to the damage caused by rising seas and stronger storms, as well as a whole bunch of other stuff. But that said, these are two different processes. And Yasmin, as I alluded to earlier, we have been told in varying forms from different people that one might pass or the other might pass, or that both need to pass or nothing passes. So there's a lot out there. As we launch into this week, what are your expectations?
Oh, my expectations. I think this is one of those times where I don't know. I kind of don't have any expectations. It seems a little too good to be true as far as what is in the bill. And then there was a whole deal with the cryptocurrency, and I don't know what came from that, because all this is happening right now and I haven't seen any updates yet. The infrastructure bill, though, is so long overdue. And it's very easy to say we need better infrastructure in this country, but the act of actually getting that done is much more difficult. Sometimes it involves displacing communities and reworking communities altogether, redesigning cities, things like that. I live in Houston, Texas, and this city is built on freeways. We have no rail. Well, we have a rail system, but it's very small, very limited. We have a bus system that nobody likes to use. So there's, as far as going green and then having better cities and having quieter cities and having better infrastructure, there's so many factors that go into all of that. Another thing that was mentioned in the bill was the coastlines and protecting them from stronger storms. And I live in Houston, so again, this is another big issue for me. And in Houston and Galveston, which is the actual coast city about like an hour south of Houston, it's about 30 minutes south from me. We have the Galveston seawall there. There was a huge hurricane back in the year 1900, so they built a seawall to help protect the city from the storm surge and things like that, and it's helped a lot. It hasn't really been updated though. A few years ago, about over 10 years ago now, we had another huge storm and it wrecked it, and nothing's really been done to fix it. And all of that is infrastructure. And the reason why it's an issue is because the Houston Ship Channel and all of the Houston oil and gas industry is there. It's all very vulnerable. So if a big storm comes, that's a national issue, maybe even has international implications. This bill is very important. It feels very big. It feels like a lot to get through. I don't foresee it going through without any big opposition, but I don't know. What's gonna happen. We'll see.
Okay. I'm gonna attempt to work through what I think is going to happen, understanding that there is a lot going on, obviously, and we don't. Okay, so supposedly what is supposed to happen is that you have the bipartisan bill, you have the reconciliation bill. If both need to be approved or neither will be approved. Now, why would that happen? Well, if Manchin and Sinema tank the reconciliation bill, then theoretically we won't have already had a House vote on the bipartisan bill. So the progressives together can tank that. In that case, nothing would happen. In theory, it could also happen in the opposite way, although that doesn't seem likely to happen. So the end possible outcomes are you only get the bipartisan bill, you only get the reconciliation bill, you get both, you get nothing. I don't see any road by which you only get the reconciliation bill. I feel like Manchin and Sinema would definitely kill it if they weren't getting the bipartisan one, which seems to be the only thing that they want. That said, I don't think that they necessarily care all that much if we get anything. And so I do not rule out the possibility that nothing happens, because I do not believe that many of these centrist senators really give a damn if they go into the winter, if they go into the midterms having accomplished nothing. Now, the issue is that on the other side, the progressives, you know, with their figurehead in this case being AOC, say we too are willing to have nothing. We will kill this whole thing if we don't get the reconciliation bill. The thing is, I don't think that they don't care if nothing gets done. I don't think that this is equal. I don't think that there's perfectly symmetrical warfare here. I believe that those progressives would really prefer to get a lot, but I think that they would hate to get nothing. And so I think that there is a chance that we get nothing. I think it's more likely that they will be willing to allow the reconciliation process to go through, but be stripped down to some extent. And I don't know exactly how much. I don't know if you lose 10%. I don't know if you lose 60%. But I think that if they did strip half or more out of that, which might well be what Sinema and Manchin require, I've seen the promises from the progressives, but I don't know that they would be willing to kill all of that, knowing the damage that would be done. Even bearing in mind the fact that in the bipartisan bill, quite a bit of what is there is pretty bad. Privatization of what is, you know, now public land and public goods and public services, those sorts of things. Are they wrong? If that were to happen, would they be wrong to allow a stripped down reconciliation bill? I think that that is more complicated than most will be willing to acknowledge. Ambiguity and nuance is not popular because it's not rewarded, but there would in theory in a stripped down bill be quite a bit that is good. Now, I would love for them to be willing to tank the whole thing to see if maybe Sinema and Manchin would blink. But again, I don't know that they would, because I don't think that they fundamentally care about any of this. So now with all of that, I don't know, Yasmin, what do you think? Do you think that the progressives are likely to follow through if the reconciliation bill gets stripped down a whole bunch? Would they tank the whole thing?
I would like to think that, yeah, similar to what you said, that they wouldn't let it be an all or nothing thing, right? I think ultimately at the end of the day, I believe that AOC cares about her constituents and the American people. Ultimately, in her heart, whatever. I know that's a weird thing to say about a politician in general, but I do think that she actually does care about people. This does get into more about just playing politics, playing the game. I don't know if that's what the progressives and the Democrats are attempting to do. I don't know if they'll be good at it. The Republicans, historically, especially in recent years, are better at playing the game of politics because they've had to be. Because their stances are not popular, because the things that they want don't benefit the American people. So they kind of have to frame things in a way that they trick people, and they have to work with the systems to find loopholes here and there because they don't have the public support for it. It's also frustrating that, you know, two senators have so much sway over all of this. Two Democratic senators who are just being annoying because they're getting paid to be that, you know. It's so much bigger than two senators, two people in government. It shouldn't be this way. I don't know what the solution is besides like reworking all of our government structures, but this is the system that we have, and this is the one that we have to work with. The Republicans have always understood that. The Democrats, I think, are starting to get that now. But whenever you have such a big bill like this too, it's going to be complicated. It's going to be really hard to get it passed. And if so, are the compromises going to be worth it? What concessions are people willing to make? And are those things that maybe can be addressed further down the line in smaller bills? We'll have to see.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, a lot of this is counting on the fact that the hope that Nancy Pelosi will actually manage the timeline in a way that allows, you know, both to be passed simultaneously. She might not. She might go with how the senators would prefer that it get done. Now, if she were to do that, that would then one expects be the trigger that would cause the progressives to turn against it. If it's now divorced and they have to rely on hopes or assurances, then they would, based on what they've said before, have to tank the bipartisan one. So we'll see. And look, the stakes could not be higher, both for what will be included in here, but also the fact that it is likely that if anything is going to be done on climate, this is the only place that it's going to be done. If you're an international viewer, you may not understand why you only get 1 year out of four to get something done in a presidency. And you're right, it's stupid. But Biden doesn't seem like he's going to, what is he going to fight more in his second or third year than he did in his first? I kind of doubt it. So that's the thing. Look, if you believe that tactically or whatever, holding strong on that thing is important, that's totally fine. I get that. And the stakes are super high. But understand, nothing being done is not like this is not just, hey, it's a story we talked about. It is also probably the only opportunity. It doesn't have to be, it shouldn't be, but it probably will be. So let's just bear that in mind. Like, these costs are not philosophical. You know, this is not just a fun thing. We're not rooting for sports. We're not discussing the most recent episode of Ted Lasso. This is real, obviously. So let follow the tactic if you want, but let's bear in mind what the costs are, and the costs are as significant as they can be in politics. So anyway, any final thoughts, Yasmin?
No, can I just say no? Okay. It's my final thoughts are basically just, you know, we just got that recent climate report that we're already worse than we should have been at this point. And coming back from that is gonna be so, the stakes are so high. It's what you said, the stakes are incredibly high, and it's very scary to think what will happen if something like this doesn't get passed and if real changes don't start to happen, even if that means that the real people, the American people especially, have to be inconvenienced in some ways.
Yeah.
In the long, we have to think about the long term.
Yeah, and man, there's so much about the system that's so frustrating. Like knowing that, so if nothing gets done, presumably one would expect that the Democrats are gonna be destroyed in the midterms, and probably rightfully so. If they got, you know, if they held office, they didn't accomplish anything. And so like, oh, well then Democrats would learn their lesson. Nope. No, they will not. That's the thing. The consequences that seem rational very rarely actually manifest in politics, which is one of the most frustrating parts about it. Mm-hmm. Now that said, there's a lot of other frustrating stuff going on. So why don't we turn to, you know, we've been talking about the issues with America, but let's focus on the issues with Yasmin's home state. What the hell is up with Texas? We're gonna talk about it. How is it going? The pandemic in Texas right now? Well, I will take you back first to March 2nd of this year, where Governor Abbott was very excited to announce that he was lifting the mask mandate and opening Texas 100%. And why? Well, there's a lot of reasons why you might do that. You might do that because you think that the science says it's safe, the CDC's okay with it. But then the fact that you did that announcement to the Lubbock Chamber of Commerce implies to me that the CDC is probably not the foremost thing on your mind. It's probably about getting back to literal business as usual. So that was a few months ago. How are they doing? Well, dozens of Texas hospitals are now out of ICU beds as COVID-19 cases again overwhelm the state's capacity. Over a third of adult patients in North Texas in all their hospitals are there specifically for COVID. And even children's hospitals are at 97% capacity. Austin, where I lived and went to grad school, had at one point a couple days ago, 6 open beds in its ICU. Not for COVID, for anything. And that was a couple days ago. So that has left Texas in a position where it needs to do something, but we know a few things they do not want to do. What they will do though, is try to get other people to help them. The Texas Department of State Health Services will be utilizing staffing agencies to provide medical personnel from out of state to Texas health state care facilities to assist in COVID-19 operations. The governor has also sent a letter to the Texas Hospital Association asking hospitals to voluntarily postpone elective medical procedures for which a delay will not result in loss of life or the deterioration of a patient's condition in order to increase hospital capacity for COVID-10 patients. So we wrote that out as a graphic, but it was an announcement from the office of the Texas governor exactly like that first one. So in March, it's, hey, everybody, get out there and have fun. You don't need to take care, you don't need to worry about any of this. Now it's, dear God, are there any doctors in other states that can come to save us? So That's how it started. Now this is how it's going. Yasmin, answer for your state.
I can't. How can I? You know, there's always a joke in Texas, you know, we're always making fun of Florida. And lately it's like I've been talking to my Florida friends. I was like, I can't even say anything to you guys anymore because of what's going on here. I actually just got back from Austin. I was there over the weekend and I spoke to someone who I don't want to say too much, but she's a doctor, right? And she was the one who was telling me all about how bad it actually is within their Austin hospital system and the neighboring cities. And in Houston, it's also very bad. In 2020, during the first big spike of COVID, a lot of the Texas Children's Hospital and, you know, other children's hospitals and things like that, they were using their beds and things like that to help treat some of these COVID patients. And now they can't even do that because those beds are filled with kids. And I lost my train of thought, but there's a lot going on there. And also the ER, that's what it was, the ER, they're checking people in and they're keeping them in an ER. Emergency rooms are supposed to be a place where you go in and you're diagnosed. And then either you're admitted into the big hospital or you get sent home. But now people are staying in the hospitals. There's a crazy nursing and even doctor shortage that's happening now. And you can't blame people for being burned out and quitting their jobs. Like they would rather be unemployed, this thing that they spent years of their lives studying to do, rather than deal with the stress and the dangers of going to work in these hospital systems.
Exactly,
as far as Greg Abbott, you know, back in March 2020, when he decided to reopen the state my timeline might be off, but he reopened the state within about like 2 months of it shutting down, of quarantining,
like locking.
Something like that. And but it was way premature. And everybody was like, you know, what is the long-term goal here? What do you think is going to happen? And now we were asking for people from other states to come. And it's like, why would they come? You know, we did this to ourselves. Not that we
I'm sure many will. You know, they're going to be even more stressed. It's going to weaken the surrounding state's ability to deal with COVID. It's going to potentially expose those healthcare workers to increased risk of getting COVID now, and totally unnecessarily. Like Texas does not need to be as hard hit. And by the way, like I'm joking a little bit because I think Abbott is an absolute ghoul. He's a monster. But I love Texas. I don't want Texas. I lived in Texas for like 5 or 6 years. I don't want Texas to be hit this way. I don't want any state to be hit this way. And it didn't need to. Abbott didn't need to prematurely open. He didn't need to, at a state level, ban mask mandates and ban vaccine passports and ban all this other stuff that they weren't even doing. But just to vice signal to his base that he doesn't give a damn about COVID or anything that happens. Now, it's not to say that in this most recent announcement, there's nothing that's good or might be helpful. Abbott instructed state agencies to open more COVID-19 antibody infusion centers across the state to treat COVID-19 patients with therapeutic drugs, and directed state agencies to increase vaccination availability across the state. But he's still a Republican and he still desperately wants to be president someday. So he's not going to personally encourage people to get vaccinated. He's certainly not going to require it for literally anything. So it'll be available. That's good. I got news for you though. It's been available for months and months and months. You need to encourage the knuckleheads that you have beaten into submission with your misinformation to actually go and get it. And time is rapidly running out, I fear. I want you to look at this graphic summing up recent trends in cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. So cases have more than doubled in the past 2 weeks. Hospitalizations have exactly doubled in the past 2 weeks. Deaths have also doubled. They are thankfully still low, but we also know that they tend to lag those two other metrics. So it is possible that the 58 deaths we experienced 2 days ago in Texas could be 100 or 200 or 300 in a few more weeks. I hope not. I hope that the fact that, you know, vaccinations tend to be overrepresented in those who are most at risk. But that said, we could be entering into a dark period, not just nationally, but specifically in places like Texas. And so I hope if you're there, you get vaccinated, you stay safe. Yasmin, I hope that you're keeping safe while you're there, because you might be surrounded by a lot of people that are not.
No, I am. And I know that I am. So I don't go out very much. But it's what you were saying whenever you're reading about what Abbott's doing. The vaccine availability is not the issue. There's never been, like, we have vaccines. We have signs everywhere. People say, oh, we have vaccines, you know, at drugstores, at local ERs and things like that. That's not the problem. It's the messaging, it's the base, it's the people who just won't do. On top of that, the thing about Texas, I love this place, I do. And in the last year especially, it has been very difficult just to live here and not to just feel, not ashamed, but just like almost embarrassed. Like, yeah, I live here, yeah, I like it, but I'm not like that, you know. And it's weird because you kind of have to qualify your existence as a Texan now, because whenever anybody hears about Texas, it's like, oh, you guys are crazy. And they're like, yeah, but it's not our fault. And then the bigger issue is obviously that all of this was so preventable and he did nothing. He sat there and did nothing. He denied things. He wasn't helpful. He thwarted efforts from cities and counties to actually do something for their people, which is something that we're seeing now with the school districts in all the major cities, and well, the three biggest cities in Texas. You have the Austin ISD, Dallas ISD, and Houston ISD all bucking these mandates from the governor, which is crazy. That's a little good. Unprecedented, but it's good. It's what needs to happen.
If it's necessary.
And these cities are the ones who are bearing the burden of all these sick people, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure they're going to be attacked viciously, if not by Abbott, certainly by the base, but they feel that it is necessary to save as many lives as they can. Let's move to a slightly different angle on this. As hard hit as Texas is by COVID, you would expect that if you were elected representative there, you would at least want to pretend like you were going to do something. Ted Cruz is not that sort of politician. He is doing something, but it hardly seems designed to save Texan lives. Take a look at this.
My views were very simple. There should be no mandates, zero concerning COVID. That means no mask mandates, regardless of your vaccination status. That means no vaccine mandates. That means no vaccine passports. And I've introduced legislation, a bill to ban vaccine passports. This week, I'm introducing a bill to ban vaccine mandates. And this week, I'm introducing a bill to end mask mandates.
He's got lots of bills, just tons of bills. Soon he'll have a bill for every Texan who needlessly dies of COVID in his state on a daily basis. He doesn't care about those. He's not even pretending to care about those in this interview, Yasmin. But he does want to reassure the Republican base that he is going to protect their so-called freedom to get sick and die in ever-increasing numbers.
You know, it's so nice to see my senator working so hard on all these stupid, pointless, and destructive bills. At least he's doing something. Good to know how Ted Cruz spends his time, and this is it's on this stuff. It doesn't make any sense. You know, banning masks don't hurt anyone, right? Why would you ban it? Why would you say you can't wear a mask? If I want to wear a mask, then why isn't that my choice? You know, it's
he's just talking about banning mask mandates. But of course, Republicans have been getting in people's faces and attacking them for wearing masks.
I was thinking there's some pastors who are banning masks in their churches and things like
too. Yes.
Yeah, so that's kind of separate, but you know, adjacent. But then also, everything about like the vaccine passports and you can't mandate a vaccine, they're acting like this is new. You know, every time you have to go to school, you have to make sure you're up on your vaccines every school year, right? My brothers and I are very close in age. My parents used to walk all of us into the doctor's office and get our shots. It was normal. It is normal. It's still normal. Nothing is new about this. So like, I don't understand. Vaccine passports, also, you can't travel to certain places without getting certain vaccines either. None of this is new. It's all protocol.
Exactly. No, it's just and it's all again, it's all just vice signaling. He is not worried about people getting sick or people dying. He is worried about coming out of this period and having the Republicans think that he was with the commies during that time. That's what he's worried about. Now, very briefly, I do want to show you a little bit of what Sean Hannity had to say during the section. He wants to at least pretend as if he's a bit more worried about people dying, but we will see what he is willing to say and what he's not in this section.
I've seen the worst of this. I know people right now who have loved ones on ventilators. I've seen people die. I'm telling everyone, take it seriously. You have to take into account your unique medical history, your current medical condition. I urge everybody, research. If you own a telephone, you can do a lot of research on your own phone. Then, in consultation with your doctor, doctors, or other medical professionals, you've got to make the decision. Everybody knows about masks, social distancing, three vaccines. I'm not a doctor, Senator. I'm not going to play one on radio and TV. I'm not qualified.
Okay. So, I will avoid totally relitigating that. That has never stopped him or other Fox hosts from encouraging people to get guns or do anything else in their life. This belief that they need to be an expert before they provide advice. They provide advice in literally everything. But also, at a time when so many people are getting sick, flooding hospitals and dying, what we do not need, and he is providing advice, by the way, just not advice to get vaccinated. His advice is you should get your phone and do a whole bunch of independent research. We will never help you. We're never gonna have any of the people on who made the vaccine. We're not gonna have the head of the CDC. We're not gonna answer any of your questions. You go on Reddit or whatever and spend countless hours racking your brain about whether you should get it. Go meet with your doctors, other healthcare professionals. You should be having your own institute where you spend week after week just, should I do it? Should I get it? No, that is not what we need right now. Okay, it has been months and months of this thing. It is safe. That is what we know, and you need to get it now. Okay, if you get sick with COVID now and you die, as so many people are, it doesn't help at all that 6 months from now you might have come to the conclusion that you should get vaccinated. Time actually does matter, and he is scared there. Okay, he's not scared of people getting sick or dying. He's scared again of being perceived to have been pro-vaccine in a time when that is not safe for right-wingers. He knows that he will be attacked and he will be criticized if he comes across as encouraging people to get vaccinated. And that is clearly his biggest fear there. Any final thoughts, Yasmin?
It's frustrating whenever so much of this entire conversation is nothing about actual vaccines and about actual health and public health and all the implications that come along with it. It's been so politicized. People accuse the left of politicizing it, which is hilarious to me. Yeah. It makes no sense. But I don't know if that's just projection or gaslighting or whatever you want to call it. But people just need to understand what the actual issue is and not get sidetracked by all this rhetoric and all these opinion pieces and whatever, and on Fox News, they change their mind overnight and they act like no one will notice. Like whatever they said the day before didn't count. It does count. It does matter. And people have died because of what they said yesterday, regardless of what they're saying today. It's good that they switched their messaging. It's very late though. And unfortunately, I'm not sure that the damage wasn't already done.
Yeah. I'm going to end with one more quote from Ted Cruz. He said in that interview, "In a time of crisis, people's character is revealed." I do believe that. I think that people's characters are real. I think of politicians. I think of pundits on TV, of regular people. Our character is revealed. I'm perfectly comfortable with my character when it comes to this pandemic. I will ask to all the right wingers watching this, do you believe that you will look back, that others will look back on your actions and statements and believe that your character was all that it could have been? Okay, with that, we're going to take our second break. When we come back, more news. So stick around. I couldn't hear that first. Anyway, hello, everybody. Hey, we still got some more show. I'm Johnny Arola. Yasmin is here. Everybody, we always plug at the end of the show. Let's not wait. Yasmin, where can people watch the second season of your show?
So it's a podcast, you can listen to it. If you find me on Instagram, that's an easy way to find me. It's YAZZZZK, 5 Z's in there. The podcast is called Global Thread. It's available wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can check out the website, globalthread.org. And we just launched season 2, which I mentioned earlier. And I'm very excited. This is gonna be a good season. We talked about Taiwan and China on yesterday's episode, and upcoming, we're gonna talk about Belarus and I have a few others, but it's always changing depending on what's in the news at the time, what's relevant. It's a lot of fun. I think it's fun. I think it's interesting. I try to break it down for you, some things that you are kind of glossed over in the news stories just because there's no time for it. Yeah. Hopefully that's a reason why they're glossing over certain things, but it's all available.
For me, it's mostly ignorance. But I do appreciate that. That's awesome. Everyone go take a listen to the show. TDR is still in its first season. We should probably end this season at some point. We really do need to eventually put a cap on this thing. Anyway, but that's very exciting. I'm glad that it's been working out so well. And everyone should go take a look. We occasionally will dabble in things like that, but obviously we don't have the level of expertise and knowledge that Yasmin does. So definitely go take a look at that. Now that said, we have time for one more story in this. I know, Marissa, I see the clocks. They're not in my favor. So let's jump into this last story.
Do you think that you should resign for misleading people about
identify yourself after the question?
Jackie Alamany from the Washington Post.
Okay, no, I think that's absurd. I have not misled anyone. I've not put out misinformation. So no, that I would not even consider it.
Fact check, she has actually multiple times. That is not a new video, by the way. That video was back from March when Marjorie Greene was briefly suspended for spreading COVID pandemic related misinformation. Well, she's been suspended a couple times since then. She's in fact on the razor's edge of being permanently suspended from Twitter, at least according to the way they say they do things. So she has now been suspended for a week for posting COVID misinformation. It's one violation away from a permanent ban. So you might recall, I think it was about a week or two ago, she was suspended for 12 hours, I think. Well, now it's up to a week. So what is the actual thing that she said that caused this most recent suspension? She tweeted, "The FDA should not approve the COVID vaccines. There are too many reports of infection and spread of hashtag COVID-19 among vaccinated people. These vaccines are failing and do not reduce the spread of the virus, and neither do masks, vaccine mandates, and passports violate individual freedoms." So that is obviously misinformation. To say, like, you could be hyperbolic and say, "Man, you know, I support vaccination, but I wish the level of protection was a bit higher." You cannot say they're failing, they don't reduce the spread of the virus, and neither do masks when they both 100% do. So that's misinformation. So we'll get into the consequences, like the long term. But Yasmin, what do you think about this? A week suspension, does it make sense? Do you think that she's eventually gonna be permanently banned? How do you think this is gonna play out?
I don't think there is any way that she will not say something like that again. It really just depends on whether or not Twitter will follow through on what they said they're going to do. It seems like they have been so far. The misinformation is staggering. They don't really feel the need to fact check themselves, and they know that their base won't either. So they can say whatever they want. It can be completely untrue. It can be completely, you know, even if they get one or two points wrong, there's never any accountability for any of it. So. You can't just let people say things like that without there being consequences, even if that is, you know, just within her party, just people saying, "Hey, Marjorie, that's not the case. You can't tell people that." I don't know why something so basic is called into question so often. I don't know why that's controversial to say that you can't say things that are untrue to the public as a representative of said public. But that's what we're dealing with here. And unfortunately, it detracts and distracts from a lot of the things that actually do matter. Like, are the vaccines actually effective? Yes, they are. Do masks actually work? Yes, they do. Does it help reduce the spread? Yes, it does. Are we in this situation with the Delta variant because people refuse to get vaccinated and because people refuse to wear masks and social distance? Yes, we are.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And by the way, the standard isn't even as high as you were saying. Like, they can lie about all sorts of things. There's a few areas that are like directly tied to people dying that right now, briefly, we're not letting you lie about so much. And like you can get away with so much exaggeration and misinformation. She is like seemingly specifically trying to run afoul of this. And that is possibly what she's doing. Is it possible that her being permanently banned is more valuable to her brand than being on Twitter? She's not that great on Twitter anyway. I wouldn't rule it out. So we'll see. One more suspension, yeah, and supposedly she's permanently banned. I would not say that that is definitely going to happen even if she spreads it, but we will be watching to see. For now, we'll see if she treads lightly. I wouldn't expect it. That said, that is it for our linear first hour. Thank you everybody for being here. If you're watching on Twitch, you're watching on YouTube, we do have another half hour of show. So we're gonna take a short break. We'll be back soon with a lot more.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.